Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. Midi clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's joinmidi.com.
When you have to make choices between paying rent or keeping your lights on and buying food for yourself or your family, that can really impact you in a deeply emotional way. Food is such a basic human necessity and such a basic human right that when you don't have access to it, it can be really hard.
Relying weekly on one's local food pantry for groceries, personal items, and more can already be a stressful existence. But now a myriad of factors are contributing to additional pressure being felt from all sides of the city. More first-time users of food pantries means more demand and inevitably stretched resources and patience.
There definitely are some lingering tensions, and people are definitely frustrated. They've had to call the police because there have been fights. It's just hard to meet this demand. I think with any organization, if you're seeing double the amount of people, that's not necessarily sustainable.
So how are food pantries dealing with an unprecedented need, and maybe more importantly, the other often ignored human emotions attached to living hungry?
Yes, food is really important, and that's sort of what brings people in. But seeing someone for who they are as a human and handing them a bouquet of flowers or letting them pick out a plant that they bring home, that's usually what moves people's souls and feels the human connection with each other.
I'm Jim Hanke, and today we're looking at the increased pressure that area food pantries are feeling post-pandemic and in the middle of a historic influx in the city's population. Let's get looped in, Chicago. So earlier this month, the Chicago Tribune ran a story highlighting the struggles that area food pantries have had really since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. But now with the addition of incoming asylum seekers and national inflation, some are experiencing an even greater need than they did during lockdown. And that's because tens of thousands in Chicago are now using food pantries for the first time ever. Later in today's episode, the CEO of Nourishing Hope, formerly known as the Lakeview Pantry, will come by our studios to give us a sense of what they're experiencing on the front lines. But first, Tribune reporter Kate Armanini, the author of the piece I just mentioned, spoke with me about her findings and the original inspiration for this coverage.
Well, Nourishing Hope actually reached out to us initially just to sort of highlight the increase of demand that they're seeing, particularly and just anecdotally, the large number of Latino migrants that they're seeing through their doors. But also, I mean, immigration in Chicago is just really such an unprecedented issue in the sense that we've never had thousands of new arrivals from the southern border coming into the city. So at least at the Tribune, we're trying to cover as much of that as we can because no one really knows what that's going to look like and how that's going to shape out. So this was just really important to see what the nonprofit sector is dealing with right now.
So with this increased demand comes longer wait times, sometimes multiple hours. And keep in mind, a lot of food pantries are open limited days and hours already. So if you can't get what you need then, in the allotted time, what options are you left with? But every neighborhood is different, so Kate told me what she found in talking to the subjects that she interviewed.
It really depends at the place. So some of these pantries are only seeing maybe 20 to 30 minute waits. Others, depending on the neighborhood and how large the pantry is, that wait could be 2 to 3 hours at peak time. So you really get a wide range of emotions. Some people are really hopeful and just happy to be there and happy to be able to get this food, but others are definitely frustrated. I think all of the pantry organizers I spoke with kind of described some level of frustration from long-term residents, but at the same time, they wanted to push back against that narrative that migrants are, you know, taking all our resources, because that's not true. People coming into these pantries for the first time, they aren't all migrants. And even those that are, they're not looking for handouts. But I will say that at some locations, particularly on the south and west sides, where more migrants are being resettled, there definitely are some lingering tensions. One pantry I spoke with in Inglewood, Chosen Bethel Family Ministries, they historically have served the Black community. And now they're seeing a group that's 80% Latino. And people are definitely frustrated. They've had to call the police because there have been fights. They've had to significantly reduce the number of food that people can take just to stretch supply. So naturally, that's going to cause some tension and frustration. But at the same time, these food pantries, they're not going to turn anyone away. And they want to help. And that's, I think, the overarching goal here.
What I learned in doing our episode this week is that the Greater Chicago Food Depository is able to meet the current demand of the pantries it funnels food to. So, per Kate, it's not that we're dealing with a food shortage per se. But pantries can't simply just request more supplies or products because, again, each one is different, especially in size. So storing additional rations, especially fresh produce, even if they were available, isn't always feasible.
It's not necessarily a food shortage, even though it may seem that way. The Greater Chicago Food Depository, which provides food to the vast majority of pantries in Chicago, they've been able to meet all those orders. It's definitely hard, but they've been able to do it. All these pantries are still getting the amount of food that they're requesting. It's just a matter of making that last as long as they can with the number of people coming through. And you can't necessarily just request more food. Unfortunately, it's not that simple of a solution. If you're a small pantry and you don't have the staff, you don't have the budget, you don't have the space to manage more food, that's not necessarily the solution. So even though it's not a shortage coming from up top, in practice, it can feel that way as you're getting less proteins or less milk or eggs or whatever that product is.
And I hadn't thought about that. It's a really good point. I hadn't thought about the fact that these pantries can't just ask for more food. They don't have the ability to house it if they did. Maybe that's another question I have. Let's kind of delineate. Food pantries differ, obviously, from neighborhood to neighborhood. Some are this dedicated food pantry. Others are the back of a church. This is not just a place that, to your point, we could ask for more food, but we don't have anywhere to place it. There might be warehouse space inside a food pantry, a very big one that serves a greater community. But a lot of these are tied to faith-based organizations in the back of a church where they don't have the ability to do that. And they can only be open for a couple hours a week. Not all food pantries are the same, I guess is what I'm getting at.
And that was a question I had too. It almost seems silly to ask, why can't you just get more food? But it really isn't a straight answer. If you don't have the staff, if you don't have the funding, if you don't have the space, you just, that's not something you can do. And I would add, even these dedicated food pantries can't just increase their orders exponentially. If you're seeing double demand, you'd want to get double the amount of food. But even if you're storing all your food in a warehouse, that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have space for twice the amount of products.
Well, absolutely. And we could do a whole other topic about food deserts, right? About I can't even go to Dollar General and get whatever I need from there. I need to use my local food pantry. And boxed stuff and canned stuff is great. But their goal too is nutrition, right? I mean, you want to be able to provide fresh fruits and vegetables. And if you're unable to do that for the double amount of people that can come there, I mean, you can't have a warehouse. You physically can't have a warehouse full of fruits and vegetables for more than a week, you know, without that going bad. So that's another piece of the puzzle in this, is trying to juggle what can we actually have that we will get rid of, that we will be able to like give to people, but that's still fresh and still good. We can't rely on just constant, here's your box of pasta, here's your bag of rice.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of the pantries were actually saying, we have plenty of cans. That's not what we need, because I think that's what you traditionally think of when you're thinking of food drives and other donations to these organizations. It's fresh fruits and vegetables, it's milk, it's eggs, things you might not think to donate. A lot of that will come from the Greater Chicago Food Depository, because they have a better network to deliver these products and make sure it's fresh. But certainly it's not so simple. And if you went to a food pantry and you just got cans, that wouldn't necessarily fit all your needs. And why shouldn't these people get milk and eggs and cheese and other fresh products? Because that's obviously very important too, just for quality of life.
Can we talk about some of the statistics that are in your story, like increases either locally or nationally that maybe some of the food banks or food pantries had given you as far as increases that they're seeing?
Yeah. So the Greater Chicago Food Depository provides food to over 800 pantries. They served 186,000 households in December, which is up 29% from the year before. And that's, I think, a pretty general statistic and a good way to look at the big picture of this, because they are really connected to every food pantry here. And it's just hard to meet this demand. I think with any organization, if you're seeing double the amount of people, that's not necessarily sustainable.
And why are we seeing that increase? This is detailed really well in your story, but I'm hoping you can communicate this to people. From the subjects that you spoke with, you touched on immigration, certainly, but like, what are some of the other reasons that we're seeing this major demand?
So immigration is definitely a big one. It's definitely not the main one. That's important to distinguish. Chicago has seen, I think, 37,000 new arrivals from the southern border coming into the city since August 2022. And I think around 11,000 are currently in shelters. But even if you're in a shelter, that doesn't necessarily guarantee food access. They're run by the city and state, and they've seen shortages. They're overcrowded. Some people say the food isn't good, so that will drive you to turn to a food pantry. Other migrants are being resettled in the south and west sides and may not be able to work. So they have to turn to food pantries to get food. That's a huge issue, work permits. And it's really unclear how many migrants qualify. So if you can't work, you can't buy food. That's sort of the bottom line. But then, of course, it's not just migrants. Some of these people are longtime residents who maybe have never had to turn to a food pantry before. Just on the heels of the COVID-19 pandemic, there's a couple of things that are happening. For starters, some pandemic era expanded benefit relief programs, most of them provided by the federal government, have ended or been reduced. The biggest one is the SNAP expanded benefits. So you're just not able to get as much food with SNAP as you could before, or less people apply. So that's very hard for some people who maybe were relying on that steady stream of relief and now just don't have access to it. And the other fact is it's just rising food prices, rising gas prices, just the higher cost of living. That's really hard. And certainly because of that, people have to turn to nonprofit food distributors. So it's a whole network of causes. And because of that, it's really hard to pinpoint a solution. But there's just so many factors at play here, and all of them together are just driving this really unprecedented demand on these organizations.
Well, you mentioned first-time users of the program, for instance, and that's something we really wanted to focus on, is that there are single and double parent families who work a lot of part-time hours or maybe even full-time that are honestly trying to supplement their food intake with this stuff, right? That is like the reality of what we're in right now, is you talk about first-time users of this stuff. These are people who, like, they used to be able to go to Aldi or Jewel every, you know, week or two, and now they are having to turn to food pantries to be able to sustain themselves while increases of everything goes up, rent, gas, as you mentioned. So that's what I was curious about too, is the already working people who might not qualify, I guess is my point, might not even qualify for SNAP, but yet need to supplement the food that they bring into the home.
Yeah, definitely. There's just so much going on right now with the economy, with the high cost of living. And because of that, people who have never turned to a food pantry in the past now have to. That's what a lot of these pantries are saying too, that they're new visitors who aren't necessarily migrants. They have jobs, they're employed, they have families and normally have been able to go to grocery stores and afford it, but now it's not as easy to do that anymore because of the high cost of living.
But this conversation goes far beyond food. Kate's story begins with a Colombian migrant who's been in Chicago for about a year, taking in the simple joy of just being able to bring home some potted flowers to liven up her living space.
What Nourishing Hope has, this is specific to them. On your way out, you can grab donated flowers. I think these were potted tulips from Trader Joe's. It's donations from grocery stores in the area. And she was just so excited to have something like that, a sign of comfort and stability that she hasn't for years and years. So it's things like that that really, I think, capture the essence of these organizations and what they're trying to do. But yes, there are really so many different aspects of need here. It's not just food. For migrants being resettled, you know, they're starting over. They need furniture, they need toiletries and school supplies and clothing. So a lot of these food distributors also have other parts of their organization that are providing those items. But it's certainly not just restricted to food. It goes beyond food. It covers so many aspects of people's daily lives. And it's just so much on these organizations. And they're trying to help as much as they can, because I think the flowers is a good example. They really do care about these people, these clients. But it is just so hard to support this really unprecedented demand.
Absolutely. Just to wrap up, I would love to hear, and maybe you mentioned it already, but you know, something that you learned during this process that's really stuck with you, maybe a surprise as you covered all of this, speaking with people using food pantries, people who are running them. I just wonder what you kind of took away as a reporter from this most of all.
I would say I was just really inspired by the culture at these food pantries. They're really mission-driven organizations and they want to help and they're doing everything they can to. They're working longer hours to get more food, to get more products to supply to these people. And even though this is a very dire situation, almost all of them had a level of hope and just optimism, knowing that what they're doing makes a difference and it really improves people's quality of life. So I think that was just a great takeaway with all of this.
Absolutely. Kate, people can read this whole story on the Chicago Tribune's website. It was out earlier this month. It was really great work. Thanks so much for taking some time to talk with me today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
After the break, the CEO of Nourishing Hope, an area social services organization mentioned in Kate's article. We'll dive into her team's experiences during this unprecedented time and how they're feeding the souls of their clients as well. Stay tuned.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
This show is sponsored by Midi Health. There are great things that come with age: wisdom, experience, and knowledge, just to name a few. But if you're a woman over 40, it can also bring some less desirable things like hot flashes, insomnia, brain fog, moodiness, and weight gain, all symptoms of menopause and perimenopause. Yes, hormonal transition is a fact of life, but that doesn't mean you have to accept its symptoms as just another part of aging. MIDI clinicians are menopause experts, equipped to support you with safe, effective, FDA-approved medications, as well as supplements, lifestyle coaching, and preventative health guidance. You'll come out of the experience feeling heard and with a plan to start feeling better. Midi offers accessible care. All their services are covered by insurance, and they're conveniently accessible through telehealth visits and 24/7 messaging. You deserve to feel great. Book your virtual visit today at joinmidi.com. That's join, MIDI.com.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Kelly O'Connell is the CEO of Nourishing Hope, one of the organizations mentioned in Kate's Tribune piece. She stopped by our WBBM studios this week to discuss what she and her team are seeing on the front lines of the hunger crisis in Chicago. Kelly, let's give people first a little background, I guess, on Nourishing Hope. I know it went through a rebrand a couple years ago, previously known as Lakeview Pantry. But how long has the organization been established? What neighborhoods does it serve?
Oh, sure.
What do you provide, and how have you been able to do that for so long?
Yeah, so Nourishing Hope, like you mentioned, used to be Lakeview Pantry. We've been around for about 54 years. About 2 years ago, we rebranded as Nourishing Hope. We did that for a couple of reasons. One, while we were started in Lakeview, we no longer just serve the Lakeview community. And we all know in Chicago, neighborhoods mean a lot, right? And so we wanted to make sure we were reflecting what we actually do now. We also are more than just a food pantry. So we do case management and mental health. Our motto is food for today and hope for tomorrow. So Nourishing Hope really helped us lean into our identity this year.
That's great. What is your background personally before joining, I think, in 2016? Does that sound right?
Yep.
Where did you grow up, and what would you consider things that you bring to the table as your professional and sort of civic attributes?
So I'm a Chicago girl. I was born in the Austin community on the west side, lived there until I was about 10, and then moved down to the southwest side in a very not so well-known community called Clearing. It's by Midway Airport. So grew up down there, went to Mother Macaulay for high school on the south side, and then have lived in 7 neighborhoods in Chicago. So when I think about my work and I think about the work that we do at Nourishing Hope to bring food to different areas of the city, I understand sort of place and space and community mean something here, right? So I have lived from Austin to Clearing to Hyde Park up to Uptown, South Loop, West Loop, River North. For a long time, navigating different community areas, you really see how some communities have lots of opportunities and ways for people to connect in, and others are still on their path to figure out what that looks like. And so that helps inform the work that I do here at Nourishing Hope and the stuff I did before Nourishing Hope. So I, in undergrad and grad school, studied sociology, specifically sort of looking at race, class, gender inequality. And I've always been called to do social justice work, or said another way, it's just making sure people have access to the things they need to thrive and live the life that they want to. And so I've done work in housing, early childhood, mental health, and now food. And again, it's really about connecting people, making sure people have access to the things that they need.
That's great. Well, earlier in this episode, we heard from Chicago Tribune reporter Kate Armanini, and we dissected her story a bit. And that story ran earlier this month. And from that article, she shared that the Greater Chicago Food Depository served 186,000 households in December. And that's close to an increase of about a third from the previous year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm wondering if you can share, specific to Nourishing Hope, the increase that you're seeing overall in the community, and whether you'd consider this both for your organization and then overall, is this an all-time high, or have there been similar peaks over the last few decades as far as demand? Like, how do you classify what we're currently seeing?
You know, I think we've all lived through several crises over the last couple of years, and up until now, the height of COVID time was probably the peak that we've seen. And now we're actually seeing about the same as other folks that, you know, GCFD shared. We're seeing about a 36% increase year over year, right? Like, that also means we're serving more people than we did at the height of COVID. So right now, we're seeing a couple things sort of crash together at the same time. We see like the impacts of inflation on family budgets and household budgets. We're seeing the reduction in some federal supports, safety net supports. And then, of course, we're seeing new arrivals to Chicago and asylum seekers, you know, seeking a better life and opportunity here. And so all of those three things together, we're serving far more people than we ever have. And I think all of our partners and, you know, colleagues across the city are saying the same thing.
Now, whether it's residents who have been here for years or people who have newly arrived to Chicago, we're clearly seeing an increase in first-time users of food pantries, some who may not even qualify for SNAP benefits, perhaps because they make too much money to qualify, but yet they still need to supplement their meals, you know, with using a food pantry. What has changed post-pandemic with SNAP and other programs like that as far as qualifications or the amount of funds or food one can receive? And considering the influx that we're seeing now on demand, what do you feel, if anything, needs to change within food assistance programs to be able to handle this need?
Yeah, that's a complex question, but I will do my best. First of all, no one food pantry or food bank or the charitable food sector cannot actually support the level of hunger or support, you know, fixing the level of hunger in the country. The first line of defense are the federal support. So it's SNAP, it's WIC, it's, you know, some of the other supports that come through the federal government. Yeah. So we need those to be strong. Now, that alone isn't going to be enough food or enough dollars to put food on the table. And so that's where the charitable food sector comes in, right? And so working together, SNAP, WIC, and food pantry can really help support a family's monthly food needs. And so what we're seeing is, especially with inflation, the SNAP dollars are just not going as far. And again, remember, the federal government reduced those about a year ago now, always intended to reduce, but because it hit the same time inflation was going up, it was just sort of a double whammy for families, right? So as we look at what we can do, we at Nourishing Hope and many pantries in the city really want to make sure we're treating everybody with respect and dignity who come in. And for us, that is making sure they have access to the full nutritional mix of food, right? So that's protein, dairy, dry goods, like you might think of as a traditional pantry, fresh produce, et cetera. Because of the sort of uptick in clients, we've had to put some limits on how many people can come to us in a specific day, primarily so we can make sure that families that are coming in still have access to the food that they expect and that they need when they come to us. And so that's one of the ways we're looking at making sure we spread out.
I've heard a few different quotes from you prior to us sitting down this week. And one that stuck with me, because you mentioned dignity just now, is that it's always a challenge for an organization like yours to find out what might be going on for someone behind or underneath their hunger, right?
Yep.
And it's often not just a lack of food in their cabinets. It's caused or driven by something else, is my point. Can you speak to the emotions that come with maybe turning to a food pantry for the first time? I'm sure some people, they don't know, should I turn to a food pantry? Am I taking something away from someone who might need it more than me? Certainly there's things of like self-shame in the fact that you even have to ask somebody else to help you out in this way. What do you try to communicate to those individuals?
Yeah, it's a good question. I appreciate that you understand sort of the toughness of having to turn to a food pantry.
Sure.
You know, we're seeing, last year we saw 21,000 folks come to us for the first time ever. And doing that is really hard, as you mentioned, right? Like coming in, there's a lot of shame that can go along with it. Folks can get really emotional. And so as we do intake, as we're working, you know, meeting someone for the first time, oftentimes connecting them into our case managers or our counselors to unpack what's going on underneath the hunger is a really important step for them. When you have to make choices between paying rent or keeping your lights on and buying food for yourself or your family, that can really impact you in a deeply emotional way, right? Like food is such a basic human necessity and such a basic human right that when you don't have access to it, it can be really hard. And so, you know, we see the range, as you can imagine, of folks that are coming to us for any number of reasons. Maybe they recently lost their job and they need, you know, to bridge, or there's something, you know, tougher going on. And so we try to sort of meet them where they're at, help them think about where they might want to go, and sort of walk with them on that journey.
Another snippet from doing some research on this story. You said you did not get into this line of work in order to tell people no. I guess my question on the flip side of that is, it's incredibly commendable, but I would think there might actually be some stress on having to tell everyone yes. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah.
I mean, what is your day to day, you and your staff? I mean,
it's great to be able to not tell people no, but then in exchange for that, you have to really try to bend over backwards to help everybody.
Yeah, it is tough to tell people no. And up until now, we've been able to navigate, like I said, a lot of crises, including the pandemic, to figure out how to quickly scale up and get people the food and services that they need. This is a unique time. We're just seeing, you know, pressure on the whole system. We also are working with our team to make sure they're thinking about how they take care of themselves and trying to understand, helping the team and volunteers understand, like, we can't be everything to everyone. I mean, I think that's true for so many frontline organizations. But, you know, I'm committed to figuring out how we can continue to say yes more.
I have to give credit to my wife a little bit here, who she will keep feminine products in her car so that when she gets off the freeway in Chicago and sees a woman who might need help, hey, do you need any of this?
Yeah.
Because it's something that people don't think of.
Yeah.
They think of food, they think of cash, but people don't necessarily think about those sorts of items. So beyond food at Nourishing Hope, it seems like a natural human thing for someone to have something that would not quell just their hunger, but also sort of feed the soul. I mean, there's a part in the Tribune article about flowers and such. I mean, it goes beyond food, right? And I wanted to know if you could talk about that.
Yeah. Well, first, shout out to your wife if she wants to come hang out and volunteer with us.
Absolutely.
We're always looking for more volunteers. And feminine products are one of those things that people look to all the time, right? You can't always get those if you're needing to make choices about how you spend your dollars. And so we do absolutely give out feminine products, other hygiene products. Those are very popular. We also have a few partnerships where folks donate pet food. And so we'll also give out pet food to make sure the furry members of the family can stay nourished as well. Diapers are incredibly popular, as you might imagine.
Yeah.
Stuff for older adults in terms of, you know, hygiene products they need to. Those are always on a sort of first come, first served basis. And maybe we have them, maybe we don't. But they are incredibly popular. So if someone like your wife or someone who's thinking like that wanted to do a drive or something like that, we are always open. But I think that's what makes Nourishing Hope, and I know so many other of our colleagues here in the city, a little bit unique, is that, yes, food is really important, and that's sort of what brings people in. But seeing someone for who they are as a human and handing them a bouquet of flowers or letting them pick out a plant that they bring home, that's usually what moves people's souls and feels the human connection with each other.
Well, you're trying to take care of yourself or your family, and it's another thing to take care of a plant, right?
Yeah.
So there are things we go like, hey, I can watch this thing nourish and grow, even if I'm not feeling that growth week by week myself, you know? What do you communicate to people who... you just kind of said it, who want to help? Is it donations? Is it volunteerism? Is it word of mouth? And in what ways can someone listening try to do their part? Because hearing all this and reading about it, it's unprecedented.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rather large problem to take a bite out of, no pun intended.
But we love food puns. It's okay. Let's go.
What do you tell people who are looking to help, but they might not know exactly the right way to do that, if there is a right way?
Yeah. There's a lot of ways to plug in and help. If you have the means and the ability, we need more donations right now, right? What we saw at the height of the pandemic is sort of companies, individuals, folks just pouring into emergency food system, right? Because they wanted to make sure in a crisis, people had what they needed. We're in a crisis again, and we're not seeing that same level of outpouring of support that we did then. So if folks are able, even if you're a current donor to Nourishing Hope or to your local food pantry, you know, whatever hunger relief organization you support, if you're a current donor, I encourage you to dig a little bit deeper and see what you can do to support a little bit extra this year. And if you're not a donor, consider donating to Nourishing Hope or one of our colleagues here in the city. We rely on an incredible number of volunteers annually, roughly 3,000 volunteers that help us do what we do. And so if you have time and want to come volunteer, we have lots of different ways to volunteer. You can do pack food, sort food, or you can be on the front lines of handing food out. And so those are a couple different ways to get involved. We're at nourishinghopeshy.org. People can get connected there for a donation or for volunteerism as well.
I was going to ask you about the best ways to communicate.
Yeah.
The one question I had piggybacking off of that is, can we delineate between, for people listening, they hear about the Greater Chicago Food Depository, and it's sort of like a funnel system, right? All the food comes from them and is spread out along these ways. So when you talk about donations, you know, a more direct donation to Nourishing Hope or a pantry like yourselves, that looks different than a donation to the Greater Chicago Food Depository, correct?
Yeah, that's a great question. There is sort of a network of providers. The Greater Chicago Food Depository is the food bank for Cook County. So it covers Cook County, obviously inclusive of Chicago. I often think of them, if you think about it in like a grocery model, as a wholesaler, right? So they're going to get the large product donations, USDA commodities, national retail partners, et cetera, are going through the Greater Chicago Food Depository. And then those get distributed to their network. Nourishing Hope's part of their network. And we get about 50% of our food through the Greater Chicago Food Depository.
Got it.
I think about organizations like Nourishing Hope and other pantries as sort of the last mile to the client, right? Mm-hmm. So we're the retailers, we're the stores, you know, if you do a parallel to grocery, that the consumer or the client or the neighbor would then pick up their groceries at.
Okay, great.
And so I think donations to both are really important because obviously Greater Chicago Food Depository supports a lot of the food that we get. And then donations to Nourishing Hope and other organizations are just as important, right? It's all part of the puzzle of making sure we get food to the tables of people who need it most.
So if you or someone you know is potentially in need of using Nourishing Hope for groceries, social services, and more, Kelly concludes not to let all this talk about the current stretch of resources stop you from connecting with them.
If you are someone who's in need of food, there's a couple ways to get connected and make sure you get the food that you need. And I hope folks will consider coming to Nourishing Hope or somewhere else. And please know you don't need to feel shame. Like we're gonna see you and we're gonna help you get what you need. You can do that a couple ways. You can come to one of our walk-in markets. We have one at Sheridan. It's called our Sheridan Markets in the Lakeview community. We have another one in Humboldt Park in partnership with La Casa Norte. We also have a home delivery program for seniors. So you can go on our website at nourishinghopeshy.org and figure out how to get connected there. Finally, we have a first of its kind in the city, and it's a really unique opportunity called an online market where people can order their groceries online and pick them up at their convenience. This is a real easy way to skip the lines and choose the groceries you want and find a location that's convenient for you to pick it up. So I would encourage especially new clients to check out the online market. It's a real great way to get free groceries for you and your family.
This episode of Looped in Chicago was hosted, written, produced, and edited by me, Jim Hankey, with additional editing by Ariel Ravenay and additional recording by Chris Lopez. WBBM's news director is Craig Schwalb, and Myron Kaplan is our managing producer of national news podcasts. You can follow us on TikTok at WBBM News Radio 105.9, as well as Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at WBBM News Radio for visuals related to all of our episodes. Thanks for listening, and we'll keep you looped in again right here next week. See you then.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at newbalance.com.
O'Reilly! Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Day, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.